Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 1st, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. We begin with requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. Is there anyone here who wishes to speak on an item that's not on our printed agenda? If not, let's move to charges to advisory board members.
Should be back.
Let's not move to that. Let's move to the consent agenda.
I have a minutes correction.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Mr. Manager, if you want to just give us the quick rundown on the consent agenda.
Approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of April 3rd, 10th, and 24th. Item 2 is a request to set a public hearing for a minor modification to the cellular tower at 515 South Greensboro Street. Item 3 is also a request to set a public hearing for a minor modification to the cellular tower at 515 South Greensboro Street. Item 4 is a request to make an appointment to the Orange County Human Relations Commission. Item 5 is a procedural update on land use ordinance text amendment to revise the open space requirements in the downtown. Item 6, appointments to the Environmental Advisory Board. Item 7, additional appointments to the Northern Study Area Implementation Review Committee. Item 8, request to approve a budget amendment.
Okay. Dan, you had a correction of the minutes?
Yes, on the minutes of... of April 10th, on page 5 at the bottom, it says Alderman Coleman asked about the time frame regarding the transit study and the submittal of the application. And actually what transpired was that Alderman Coleman commented that the transit, long-range transit committee had been told that the submittal of the application would not interfere with consideration of the transit study. I hope that's clear. I should have written that down. I apologize.
I'm glad you also caught that, Dan.
Thanks, Mike.
Are there any other corrections to the minutes? Is there anything else on any of the consent agenda items?
Seven.
Okay.
No, so, actually, six. Seven.
All right. Can we have a motion for 1 through 5 as amended plus 8?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for 1 through 5 as amended plus 8. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Item 6.
Now, I just had a question on, and maybe this should be an instruction, and we've talked about having training for the volunteers, and I don't want to put too much on them, but when I review the summary of the application, it would be helpful if it was more than just one sentence, because, you know, for one of the applicants, it indicates that they're too busy, but, it would have been helpful if that was the chair's observation or was a response from the applicant.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it difficult to know.
Right.
So it would be helpful. You know,
clarity on that.
Right, and I know we've been planning to do that, and I know staff is real busy, so maybe sometime in the fall we may could have a training session for the chairs. That's it. But I'm not opposed to the appointments. It's just a comment.
Okay.
Good suggestion.
Take a look at that. I think we have maybe a couple of years ago done a sort of work session with the chairs of our different advisory boards, so it'd be another possibility.
Do it again.
Jackie.
On number 7, the additional appointments, where are those coming from? I mean, and how are they chosen?
is this the...
Is that the county asked to have somebody on it, or...?
We asked the county.
So we asked the county.
And we asked Chapel Hill.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
And I think the home builder was the mayor's suggestion.
That's a good idea. Right.
Yeah, actually, Frank Thomas is the guy works for the Home Builders Association, and he's been coming to the meeting. So, and I think based on the discussion we had the other night with Phil Post, that or following Phil Post, that there was some interest in seeing some formal representation there. So,
okay.
Is there a motion then for 6 and 7?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we adopt 6 and 7 as written. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1.
This is the presentation of the manager's recommended budget for fiscal year 2007-2008.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Manager. I apologize to interrupt you, but I meant to go back to the charges. So let me, before we get any further, call Rich Bell up to the town clerk's desk.
And you're welcome to stay for the rest of the agenda when after you're sworn.
I'll just read this to you ahead of time.
Okay.
As a planning board member, you will make studies and recommend to the Carver Board of Aldermen plans, goals, and objectives relating to the growth, development, and redevelopment of the town and the surrounding extraterritorial planning area. To develop and recommend to the Carver Board of Aldermen policies, ordinances, administrative procedures, and other means for carrying out plans in a coordinated and efficient manner. 3, make recommendations to the Carver Board of Aldermen concerning proposed conditional use permits and proposed zoning map changes as provided by the land use ordinance. And 4, perform any of the duties assigned by the Carver Board of Aldermen. And if I could get you to sign that. Thank you. If you'd like to meet the board. If you want to just go around and meet the board.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.
I look forward to working with you.
Our next charge is for Dolores Clark, and I feel like I've got to go.
I'll pay you back.
As a Recreation and Parks Commission member, you will, number 1, advise the Board of Aldermen and Town Administration concerning the acquisition of real or personal property to be used for park or recreation purposes and the maintenance and use of all town-owned, leased, or operated parks and recreational facilities, the operation of all recreation programs, future needs for the acquisition of additional recreation facilities or the expansion of recreational programs and alternative means of acquiring such facilities or operating such programs, and 2, report to the Board of Aldermen as requested by the Board and undertake such studies or perform such duties as the Board may request from time to time. Please, ma'am.
And Braxton Fushi, if you would come up to the clerk's desk.
As a member of the Board of Directors of the Orange Water and Sewer Authority, you will assist in establishing operating policies in such areas as personnel, purchasing, budget, water and sewer expansion, reimbursement agreements, rates, billing, and similar areas of operation. Assist in the overview and approval of general system development such as new water supplies, new wastewater treatment facilities, water transmission mains, and sewer outfall lines. Sharing the responsibility for the fiscal integrity of the Orange Water and Sewer Authority, and report to the Carver Board of Aldermen as requested by the Board and perform such duties as the Board may request from time to time. Thank you. I'd like to meet the Board. Thank you very much.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we'll move on to the main agenda, D1 through 4. Actually, before we continue, can I suggest we are graced in our audience with Chapel Hill Town Council member Sally Green, and also one of our most senior, or rather highest seniority elected officials in the county, County Commissioner Chairman Moses Carey. Might I suggest, they're here for number three, might I suggest that we reverse the order of number two and number three, recognizing that they already put in a lot of time at public meetings, if that's acceptable to the board. Okay, so with that, we'll begin with item D1, presentation of the manager's recommended budget for fiscal year 07-08.
By state law, the manager is responsible for submitting a balanced budget to the mayor and the board by June 1st. Tonight, the board is presented with the recommended budget for 2007-2008. Recommended budget is submitted earlier than required by law so that the board and community have sufficient time to discuss the initiatives proposed in the budget. And I will step to the podium and...
She only does one
No, I do the CIP, too.
Oh, okay.
Twice a year.
At least twice a year. I like to give other folks an opportunity to be in the limelight. And let me just say, well, this is my fourth budget presentation for the town of Carrboro. This is my 30th budget presentation in my career, but remember, I started very, very young. So. What was that, Sarah? Okay. So, with that, let's get started. And because this is my 30th anniversary, I thought it might be good to do something a little different this year. I'm presenting the board and the community with two options this year on the budget. The first one is a tax increase option. It's hard for me to put that word out there. The second one is a no-tax increase option. And let me share with you a little bit of my thinking behind presenting two options. First of all, not only do I have a history here of not routinely recommending tax increases, but I have a long history of not recommending tax increases. I told you all back in 2004 during my first budget here that that was the first increase I had recommended since 1993. So I don't take the idea of recommending a tax increase lightly. Coupled with that, as you are, I'm also very concerned about the overall property tax burden for our residents here in the town of Carrboro. Not only is it our property taxes that folks have to be concerned about, but of course it's Orange County and our Chapel Hill Carrboro School District. And when you put all those together, it certainly puts a major load on a lot of our lower income folks and middle and upper income as well, and got a concern about even squeezing out some of our middle income folks. So I don't take it lightly when I talk about the possibility of a property tax increase. On the other hand, we have a lot of capital and operating needs that we feel like are necessary to maintain the quality of life and the day-to-day services that I believe that our community has come to expect. So that's the rationale behind the two options. A little bit about the process. The budget has two basic parts, what we call a continuation budget and an expansion or proposed changes. And you'll see this year that in both options, that second part is very lean. The first is a continuation that looks at including things like inflation, budgetary commitments the board has made in the past, such as our CIP commitments, vehicle and equipment replacements, and continuations of our employee benefit program. The second piece, proposed changes involved in either service improvements or additional equipment. And again, you'll see that there's not much that we'll be talking about when it comes to that. One of the first things that we do as a staff is look at the budget on the expenditure side for savings. We always look
first and foremost, at current budget to look at one-time expenditures to make sure that we're not inflating the base budget for the coming year, and you'll see that we've identified about $290,000 that were one-time expenditures in the current budget that we pulled from the base budget so that we wouldn't, again, be building on a base budget that was larger than it needed to be. We also looked at historical expenditure trends and looked at things like what we've been spending on outside engineering fees, looked at some of the things we've been doing with our phone bills, looked at what we've actually been spending on landfill tipping fees, and we made another $85,000 in reductions. We also, as you all know, have shared for several years a full-time safety officer that's worked half-time in Carrboro and half-time with the town of Hillsboro. Our safety officer left a couple of months ago. I talked with our fire chief. We made the decision to absorb those responsibilities in the existing Carrboro Fire Department, a total savings of about $56,000, but the net savings to the town of Carrboro, about $28,000. And in fact, if you look at the budget, you'll see that in terms of positions for which the town of Carrboro is directly responsible, this budget has a net increase of one half of one position for next year. We also looked at, you know, some small revenue generators other than property taxes. The first one is there's some minor adjustments in our fire permitting fees that will generate another $2,000, we believe. We also looked at the way we routinely dispose of surplus property, which is primarily vehicles and equipment each year, and we believe that will generate an additional $22,000 in the budget for the coming year. We're always looking for opportunities to find efficiencies within our departments, and our Recreation and Parks Department identified some temporary and part-time positions that they thought could be used more effectively by consolidating and creating a couple of permanent positions, not spending any more dollars, but we believe increasing efficiency and also providing the opportunity for a formal liaison between the Recreation and Parks Department and our Arts Committee. Another very big piece of the budget in employee benefits is our health insurance, and you all know that we've struggled with that. When we first started our negotiations with our insurance carrier this year, they came back with a quote of an actual 19% increase. You'll see reflected in the PowerPoint presentation, we have negotiated that down to 13%, and that's based on the board implementing the retiree changes in health insurance benefits that we spoke with you about a couple of months ago. If the board chooses not to go that route, that would immediately add 2% back to the cost of health insurance, both for the town and for the employees who have anything other than employee-only coverage. We also remain committed to various wellness initiatives. We believe the preventative side will pay off for us in the long run. You all know we have a very good vehicle replacement program. Where possible, we are always looking at the environmental impact of the vehicles that we purchase, always trying to think green. Our dump trucks that we'll be replacing this year will be diesel. We're going to smaller pickup trucks to gain greater fuel efficiency. We believe, given the types of vehicles that we're looking to replace this year, we don't think we'll have an opportunity for hybrid vehicles, but as you all know, we currently have two hybrids in our fleet, and we would anticipate in future years we'll have additional opportunities to do that. We also continue to use B20 biodiesel, and we expect to continue doing that. Some of the key budgetary and economic drivers that affect this budget and will be affecting budgets for some years to come, and I'll talk in a little bit more detail in a minute, our population growth, the erosion of the sales tax base, our limited ability to generate revenues other than our property tax revenues, and the needs from our capital program. Looking at population growth in Carrboro, our population directly affects and can have a real impact on some of our revenues, particularly property tax and sales tax. There are others that are affected in a lesser manner, but sales tax really is the primary one. Looking at census data from the year 2000 through July of 2005, Carrboro's population increased by about 6%. If you look statewide during that same time period for all municipalities, that number is 13%. So Carrboro grew at less than half of the statewide average during that time period. As I mentioned, population affects a lot of revenues, and population indirectly impacts our tax base. We've got less people coming in. Our property tax base grew at an estimated 2.9% from last year, and that generates about $100,000 based on our current tax base, which equals about two-thirds of a penny. A penny for next year will equal about $150,000. A lot of money, I think, to you and me individually, not a lot of money for the town. Good news and bad news with the sales tax. The good news is that the half-cent sales tax, we're going to see some growth in, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. Population, again, comes into play here. The half-cent sales tax, as you all know, are distributed on a statewide basis based on Orange County's comparable population to the rest of the counties in the state. Then, in turn, that revenue is distributed back to the town of Carrboro based on our population within the county. There are a couple of significant changes that are taking place that have made it more difficult to estimate the sales tax revenues. The first one is we're seeing a lot more refunds of sales tax than we have in the past, not only more but larger refunds. The second thing is we believe we're seeing more remote sales via internet, catalog, and so forth, and if those entities that are being ordered from don't have a physical presence in North Carolina, we don't collect the sales tax on the front end, and my guess is some folks perhaps don't report that on their income tax return in April. I might be wrong about that. The 1 cent or 1% sales tax is based on point of sale and delivery here in Orange County, so this is the one that we have the most direct control over by policy decisions that are made. That's actually decreasing from the current year by about 8%, which is close to $100,000 less this year than what we received last year. We hadn't really anticipated that. So if you look at what I would say characterizes relatively slow population growth, a modest increase in our property tax base, a decrease in the 1% sales tax revenue based on point of sale, that would suggest to me that we're really not in a rapid growth situation, and that also perhaps some of our local sales tax dollars are moving to some of our surrounding counties. Another driver in the budget is that in both budget options, capital improvements are needed to maintain our day-to-day services and to maintain the existing facilities that we have responsibility for. Looking at the capital improvements in both budget options, whether there's a tax increase or not, there are a number of things that we're not able to recommend for the coming year. The first one is, it's not a huge amount of money, but at our dog park, we had anticipated spending $10,000 for fence renovations at the park. We had also planned on spending a little bit more money and putting aside reserve funds for future resurfacing. We've cut that back by about $25,000. Our actual budget for resurfacing for next fiscal year, we had originally planned to try to do $400,000 worth of resurfacing. We're now proposing $300,000. That will come out of a capital reserve fund, and we won't be recommending an appropriation of an additional $100,000. We will be doing a condition pavement study in the next budget year that will give us an idea about our current pavement condition and help us frame what our long-term needs may be, and we may need to come back and make some adjustments in the funding recommendations for resurfacing. But for right now, we think we'll be okay at that level. We also have reduced the proposed allocation for setting aside additional funds for reconstruction of Weaver Street. We had originally hoped to put $316,000 aside in reserve next year. We've cut that back to $150,000. We'll be coming to you all next month to talk about the project scope, the cost, and the options available. And depending on the options selected by the board, we may have enough money in the reserve fund to do it if you all want to do more things, because there's basically no right-of-way beyond the curb line, then we probably will have to revisit this in terms of dollars needed. There are a few technology things that we had hoped to put in next year's budget that, again, are not in either option. One that we've been looking at for a couple of years is online recreation reservation and registration software, some traffic counters, and some additional software that we just felt like we just could not afford to do in either option. A little bit more specific information about the tax increase option. This is the nice, pretty pie chart that shows the tax increase option. You'll see that it's about a $19.1 million budget, and you can see pretty quickly that public safety and public works represents about 50% of the total proposed expenditures, which shouldn't come as any surprise. That's where the bulk of the service delivery takes place to the community. To support that $19.1 million budget would require a tax increase of 2.86 cents, which is about a 4.5% increase. I know the board will remember for the last 2 years, there's been no tax increase, and for 3 out of the last 4 years, the town of Carrboro has not had a tax increase. This option would provide for much of the capital programming that it was approved by the board last fall in our capital improvement plan. It would also continue our town employee pay and benefit program, but let me hasten to add that the no tax increase option would do that as well. It also affords a very small number of service improvements for the community. This is a detailed list, and I won't run through all those, of the items that are either capital items or they are affected by the capital improvements, primarily the fire station, which has a significant amount of operating cost associated with it. This option will be able to fund replacement of vehicles, equipment, the essential things that help us to pick up the garbage, provide police patrols, fire suppression, and street and parks maintenance. It also allocates funding for street resurfacing and needed stormwater repairs. It allocates funding, as we've already mentioned, for the reconstruction of Weaver Street, and it replaces the Wilson Park bathroom facilities and provides for some other park maintenance. It also provides computer support for the new records management system that we've installed for the police department, and they've been undergoing pretty significant training for the last couple of months on that system. It also pays for 6 firefighters needed in the preparation of opening the new fire substation in 2009. The board will remember you added 5 firefighters this spring. This budget will annualize the cost of those 5 firefighters and would propose adding a 6th firefighter in July. Keep in mind we need 15 to open the station, so in the next budget year we'll be looking at 9 additional positions. The tax increase option would show a revenue increase of about $1.7 million, and let me sort of outline what that looks like. The biggest source is the other financing sources, and that includes about $481,000 from our installment financing for the purchase of vehicles and equipment. Another $300,000 that's being transferred from our own capital reserve fund, and then what's not listed up here is about another $42,000 that we have in reserve for that Geary Street storm sewer replacement. In sales and property tax, the increases there, we've talked about $182,000 in sales tax. Again, that's from the 1/2 cent sales taxes. Had we had our normal increase in the 1% sales tax, the revenue picture would have looked much better than it does now. And then on the property tax side, out of the $530,000 we show as an increase, $430,000 of that is represented by the 2.86-cent increase in property taxes. We show some increases in the fees and permits, primarily due to the annualized impact of our cell tower contracts, and you all know you approved some changes in that that will generate more revenue for us in the coming years. And we also will be entering into a contract with the Chapel Hill Carborough School System for a school resource officer at the new high school. That will be an employee of the town, but the Chapel Hill Carborough School District will fund the personnel cost associated with that position. This is a list. I told you that it would be a short list of service improvements, and I think you'll see it is a net increase of just under $33,000. I won't go into detail. These are in your decision package in the budget document. But one is a laser grading of ball fields for the Rec and Parks Department. Two is our share of continuing the Carborough Film Festival. Three is beginning some new teen initiatives in Rec and Parks. We don't do a lot for our teenagers right now, and this is to try to focus in on a very vulnerable group of kids in the community to try to give them some positive options. Next is a flu shot clinic, which would, again, be one of those wellness things that we would use to promote good health in our town employees. Vehicle lifts in the Public Works garage to allow for greater safety and efficiency. If we ever build that new Public Works facility, and these are still operable, we'll be able to relocate those to the new facility. A vehicle inspection machine where we can do our own emissions inspections. Right now, we'd have to take our vehicles to other businesses to do that. If we do it in-house, it'll be greater efficiency, and we'll get a payback on that in about 3.4 years. So, again, you can see a very short list, maybe the shortest list since I've been here in terms of service improvements. And now to the one that rolls off my tongue a little more easily, but probably doesn't do what all we need to do, and that's the no tax increase option. You can see in this option that the revenue actually would be about $50,000 less than the current budget. And the reason for that goes back to the installment financing, because we would reduce the amount of capital improvements being done for next year, then the amount that we would use for installment financing decreases fairly significantly, as you can see, $530,000. What this means is, you know, some very big ticket items that are in the CIP that will continue to be a need for the community wouldn't be funded. Things like the aerial truck for the fire department, garbage truck for public works, replacement of the Wilson Park bathroom facilities. The decrease on the property tax from the previous slide obviously is the fact that this reflects only the natural growth in the tax base, that roughly 2.9% or about $100,000. And then there's a slight decrease in expected donations. That's a result of the film festival would not be included with the no tax increase option. This is a list of things that make up the 2.86 cents. You've seen bits and pieces throughout the presentation. Let me just run quickly through those. These, again, are things that would not be in the proposed budget if the no tax increase option were selected. No vehicle lifts, no Carborough Film Festival, no laser grading of the ball field, no flu shot clinic, no aerial truck, no Wilson Park bathroom replacement, no rear loader for solid waste, no Gary Road stormwater repair, no vehicle inspection machine, no police roof repair, no teen initiative program, and that sixth firefighter would not be hired for a total net expenditure of $430,000 and change. You can see the gross impact is almost $1.8 million, but the reason for that is the bulk of these items would be installment financing, so they'd be paid off over a 5 to 7 year period. I think most people would agree that most, if not all, the items on this list are things that if they don't get funded this year, they will be back to visit all of us next year and the years to come. Wrapping up. Given the historical and current makeup of our tax base, which, as you all know, has a limited commercial base, about 11% of our tax base is commercial, and the limited ability to generate significant local revenue other than through the property tax, it's difficult right now to match our current revenue stream with the services and capital facilities that I think are expected by the community. I think both of the budget options do a lot of good things for the community. I believe that the modest tax increase option is an opportunity to think more long-term and not dig a bigger hole for the town for future budgets when we come back next year and have to deal with opening the fire substation and deal with continuing on with the sidewalk program and other necessary expenditures. But I wanted to give the board an opportunity to look at some choices and know that the staff and I worked very hard to try to provide these two options. And I want to thank Bing particularly, but also all the department heads who were here in the audience tonight. Everybody really rolled up their sleeves. We went back and asked folks to come back with ideas on how to trim expenditures, what we could do on the revenue side. And everybody was very selfless in coming together as a team and working together on this. So I take responsibility for it, but had lots of help along the way. So we're here to answer questions, and also remember we have scheduled a work session for next week, and that's the only item scheduled on the agenda.
Jackie.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you to the department heads, and I'm sure that your staff has helped the department heads pull together what you've been able to pull together. I think it is significant and admirable that you're not coming to us with an even larger possibility of a tax increase. I know that this is not something you do lightly, and I just thank you for trying to make the best of a bad situation and to keep the damage to the minimum. I think you've done an outstanding job, and I thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.
You know, I made these comments earlier, so I'm glad that my fellow elected officials from other boards are here when we were at the Assembly of Governments. I think it is critical as we look at the entire county, because the county is going to be looking at their budget, and they have a lot of items that they have to pay for, a lot of items that are going to increasing. Chapel Hill is sort of in the same boat that we are. And I just really think it's critical that we look at our economic development in a more holistic and better, and I must say in a more aggressive way, where we have, all of us have a 5 to 10 year plan and set some goals, as we do with other things that we think are important. Because if we don't, we are going to be back, and future boards are going to be back sitting here looking at sort of the same sort of factual situation that we have now. Because we're going to build more schools. We're going to have to pay for more items if we're going to continue to maintain the services at the same rate that we do. So I would encourage us as elected officials and as a town, as we're doing, we're looking at the northern transition area, to think about what we really want to do and how we're going to fund revenue. So that would be my comments. I think it's a really good budget. I know I had my first look at it this morning. And as I told Steve earlier, I sort of thought that the tax increase would be larger.
Dan.
Am I correct, Steve, that this budget document is on the website now? Or?
It was supposed to have gone on at 7:30.
Okay, and would that be on the message board? Is that where the link would be?
Andy's saying yes, so yes.
Okay. So for whoever's watching who wants to look at all this, that's where it is. I would just want to reiterate, I guess, what Jackie was saying in particular. But, Steve, I think this was an excellent, well-thought-out presentation. And that giving us the two options really clarifies what the choices are for Carrboro in the next year. And I think you've given us some things to chew about. I guess I want to say something to the citizens, which I probably also said a year ago, which is one number that sticks out in the presentation is when you look at the health care increase, which is significantly less than it was last year, but it's still, after some tough negotiating on town staff's part, is still 13%. That's a lot more than the percent increase we're seeing overall in the tax rate. And that's, as everyone understands, a national problem. And we really need to focus on things like health costs, energy costs, that, and a lot of the costs that we see more at the county level in terms of social services and schools and those kinds of things, where there's really been a failure at the federal level, and that not to in any way shunt off our responsibility for managing our budget, but to encourage citizens to really keep an eye on those much, much bigger pies that are being divvied up in ways that are not necessarily benefiting the average citizens of North Carolina or the rest of the country.
I would just add, frankly, to Joel's point, which in some respects piggybacks on Dan's point, which is that a lot of the costs that we experience are outside of our control. And so we can sit here and jawbone about what happens on the federal level until we're blue in the face. But the fact of the matter is we are going to be confronted with those costs and having to meet them. And that our staff has done a remarkable job of trying to husband the very limited resources that we have and the very limited revenue stream, which is a result of policies that come from this side of the table. And Joel's points about a perhaps more realistic and aggressive economic development strategy as a policy matter, not as a staff matter, for all of our local governments is well taken and should be heeded.
I really am pleased with what everyone has had to say, but I want to thank Steve and the staff, the manager and the staff. It just shows how amazing it was to keep it neutral last year, and how impressive it is that we kept it as close to neutral as we could this year. You know, thinking about the issue of revenue stream and looking at economic development, what really jumps out at me when I look at this is the degree to which leakage, economic leakage, seriously impacts what happens in Carrboro, and that affects everyone in the county, Chapel Hill, Hillsboro, and Carrboro. So I'm really pleased that at our retreat that we made a commitment to look at these issues and be aggressive.
Mr. Manager, I had one or two specific items related to the budget, and these are small items by comparison with the big picture that you've presented to us. And by the way, congratulations to both you and your staff for coming up with this recommended budget. I think y'all have done an excellent job of considering all of the many issues that face our town. First, I think you and the rest of the board received a copy of a forwarded email that I received regarding the possibility of beginning to provide a minimal level of recycling collection at Carrboro Town Parks. And well, I'll note that we do have recycling services that are provided here at the Carrboro Town Commons. I think by and large we don't at other locations, and so I would like for the staff to just take a look at whether there's a way that we can do that in a cost-effective manner for certainly selected materials that are particularly likely to turn up at parks. The other matter is, and you'll have to forgive me, I'm not, I you and I have discussed it a couple of times, and this board has discussed it a couple of times, and I can't remember now whether you commented it on your budget presentation or not, but one of the issues that that this board had asked the staff to take a look at and come back with a recommendation about was the possibility of extending partial health insurance coverage to our part-time employees for the town of Carrboro. First of all, could you comment on kind of how you're thinking about that issue?
Sure. I didn't go over it in the PowerPoint. It is in the budget message. But after talking with our broker, and who in turn talked with United Healthcare, who was our insurance carrier, they agreed with some conditions that they would entertain the idea of adding permanent part-time employees who work at least 20 hours a week. The stipulations were, number one, that there would be a 90-day waiting period for those employees who enrolled. The second thing would be, as I recall, when the board asked for this information, the request was to approach the carrier about adding these employees potentially without there being a contribution by the town. When we approached the carrier with that, they simply said they would not do that, that they would require a 50% contribution from the town for the cost of the employee-only health coverage. That we have seven employees who potentially fit into that category based on the new rates. That's estimated at an annualized cost of about $18,000. The bigger issue than the cost for this year is the fact that our own broker, who represents our interest, not the interest of the insurance companies, and the insurance companies that he's talked with as well, view part-time employees as a higher risk than full-time employees, and I guess they have the numbers to back that up, and I'm not an insurance expert, but that's what they've said, and there apparently are some carriers who don't add or don't want to allow part-time employees. This year there wouldn't be an impact on our rates, but in future years there could be a negative impact on our rates, and it might limit our ability to go out to the marketplace to shop our insurance if for whatever reason we become disenchanted with United Healthcare. At the same time, you know, we've been talking about making some minor modifications, I believe, in our retiree health insurance coverage to try to hold down future costs, which are significant, by the way. Just if we never added another employee to retiree health insurance, those numbers are staggering over the long haul. But doing that on the one hand, and then looking at adding a group that our own broker and the insurance carriers have said increase our risk profile in the market. All those things being said, it was my recommendation that you'll see in the budget message that we not add part-time employees to our health insurance coverage, that I just didn't think financially was something that the town could really afford to do, that over the long haul my concern is we risk the financial ability of the town to pay for the insurance for our full-time employees and for their own ability to pay.
Well, one of the things we certainly pay you to do is to give us your best opinion, your best estimate of what the best course of action for people of the town of Carrboro will be. So we certainly appreciate that. I would like to, I guess I would like to get some staff reaction, not necessarily tonight. It could be y'all could report back to us or whenever it suits you. But $18,000 to provide half of the cost of coverage for seven employees implies a very high per employee cost for the health insurance, and that may have something to do with who the particular seven employees are, or it may have to do with the insurance carrier's perception that there's a high risk.
Our cost next year will be over $5,000 per employee.
Okay, so
they didn't pick out seven people and say, your rate will be different. That, that would be discriminatory.
Okay.
It's just simply, it's expensive, and the board will recall in our conversations from a couple months ago with our broker that, unfortunately, the town's claims experience over the last few years has not been good. The insurance company has been paying out more than they've been taking in, and they're not in the business to lose money.
Well, let me just throw out there the idea or the question of whether there's another way to address this situation by looking to the possibility of providing some kind of health insurance, partial health insurance payment stipend or something like that to our relatively few part-time employees. And to do that in a way, if we contributed, something like $1,500 toward the cost of health insurance, for example, for seven employees, by paying it to them and letting them buy their own insurance, that they might be able to achieve the same result or much the same result with a lower overall cost. Seven times 1,500 would be $10,500 as opposed to $18,000, and it might be a type of payment that would be easier to control the cost of in future years than going with adding these folks to our group policy. So I would like to just ask that the staff take a look at what the various implications for our overall personnel compensation package would be, and what the implications for our budget would be of some type of project or program along those lines.
Okay.
Yeah. In that analysis, I still would like to know what the subsequent year's effect of having such a program would be. And I guess the only other question I would have, which I just thought of while I was sitting here, is that is it possible for the employees to participate in, and I don't know if they do or not now, in sort of a flex plan, even if they don't have insurance? Is it a way for the part-time employees to sign up for a flex plan where they have a certain amount of whatever they make taken out of their paycheck if they so elect to do so, because that's not taxed. Because that $1,500 don't be taxed if they get a stipend.
Probably.
But it's income tax. So I don't know if that's possible or not. That's a sort of a different result where they could, shelter that money from being taxed and also use that money for health costs. So I don't know if that's a possibility.
We have a flexible spending account available for employees. Is Desiree here?
I am here.
Is that available to our permanent part-time employees, Desiree?
It is, but currently we don't have any permanent part-time employees who participate.
But we, for example, employees who now have dependent coverage that's tax sheltered through the flexible spending, and things like out-of-pocket expenses for deductibles and those sorts of things. Employees choose one time a year up to, I can't remember what the maximum
5,000.
Is. And is it 5,000 for us?
Yeah.
Okay. Some communities do it less than the federal law allows, can't obviously do more. But that is a tool we can look at.
Mm-hmm. Jack?
The last time we brought this up, we discussed the idea of sending a resolution or a letter to our state and national leaders expressing our pain and expressing how the lack of an effective national state healthcare system was hurting not only individuals but was hurting municipalities and through that hurting individuals again, just kind of adding evidence to what a mess it is. Did we send such a resolution or such a letter or have that discussion?
I don't think we have sent that letter, but this certainly is. Adequate prompting.
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, this is only going to get worse, and when you think of how hard it is for us, can you imagine, like, large cities? And then it's impacting the taxpayers, and as it's impacting the taxpayers, it's decreasing individuals' ability
to then go out on the market and buy their own health insurance because their taxes are going up. And it's just part of this
cycle.
It's not like I'm the first person to think of this, so I won't go into a lot of detail. But I would like us to get a letter, a resolution to our federal and state leaders expressing what pain a lack of an adequate health system is doing.
All right. Sherman and I will work on that.
Are we ready for a new topic?
Yes.
I have two small items I'm interested in. One is we talked last fall about our interest in the town commons being more accessible to the community, and staff provided us with a spreadsheet showing the revenues from the $100 reservation fees for the up to 4-hour event that over about the last 5 years it averaged about $600 a year in revenue, and over the last year it's been a little higher because of the really, really free market, which has been a regular event. So I would like to see the town commons used more. I'd like citizens to feel like they could have their events there, and I see that as something that hopefully wouldn't, that $600 or so is something that hopefully wouldn't break either of our budget scenarios. So I'd like to look at eliminating that fee, if at all possible. I mean, not the reservation itself, but the fee associated with it. The other item, and I think this could be done potentially in a revenue-neutral way, is, you know, we're talking a lot about trying to imbue more of a sense of entrepreneurship in the community and encourage people to develop businesses. And I'm thinking about the people who might be just starting a business that they're looking at. It might be $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 revenue in a first year, and they go into town hall to James' office for help, and one of the first things they might hear is, well, we're going to hit you up for $50 for the privilege license. And I would like us to look at breaking up that zero to $100,000 range that's all $50 now. And I acknowledge that $50 is not very much for most business people. I certainly don't mind paying it myself. But I think that for those brand new and very small businesses, I'd like it to be a token amount. And so I'm just thinking about, you know, just off the cuff possibility, for example, a 0 to 25 that's maybe $10, and a 25 to 50 is 25, and 50 to 75 is 50, and 75 to 100 is 75, and we might stay at roughly the same overall revenue as we are now, but we're making that seem more of a token number at the bottom end of that scale, which I think people just starting out in a business with all they have on their plate, I think that would be helpful. So, and but at the same time, I don't want to create something that would be very difficult to administer. So I'd want, you know, that feedback as well.
Alex. Just a process observation. Are we not getting into levels of minutia that are perhaps more appropriate for the work session?
Fine with me.
I mean, I guess it's a, you know, a question of raising some issues that hopefully will help the staff to be more prepared to address some of the issues that the board is interested in. I think we're actually done. So
I hope to have more minutia after I actually read the document.
Sure,
we know you will.
I'm not going there. Okay. We don't need any type of motion at this point.
There's a motion to just to accept it, and if there's anything in particular, other than the items you've already mentioned that you'd like addressed at the work session, you can tell us now, or we will. All the staff, department heads, will be back in the next meeting, and we'll have responses to as many of these things as we can by next Tuesday.
Okay, I no longer have it in front of me. What is the
attachment?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded attachment A, which establishes a schedule of meetings on the budget. The most notable two dates to mention to the public here will be a public hearing on the recommended budget. That will be Tuesday, May 22nd. So Tuesday, May 22nd will be the day for those of you who are listening to our discussion who want to comment on the budget. Please come Tuesday, May 22nd. And then the board is tentatively scheduled to consider possible adoption of a budget for next year on June 19th, Tuesday, June 19th. So the hearing, public hearing comment period will be May 22nd. Obviously, we welcome any comments from the public or suggestions between now and then as well. Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we set that schedule. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. We're going to skip over item two and go straight to item D3, a presentation of the 10-year plan to end homelessness. Welcome, Chairman Carey. I'm glad you got the opportunity to.
Glad I got the opportunity to go to another meeting this week.
I'm glad you got the opportunity to hear about the tight budget that the town of Carrboro operates on. I apologize if it took longer than it might have needed to.
No, that was absolutely necessary, and I appreciate the opportunity to sit through your budget. I also appreciate the opportunity to be here before you tonight, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to introduce this subject of the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness in Orange County. I will introduce it. I will ask our housing director, Dr. Tara Fikes, to provide a brief summary if you wish, and we will both respond to questions if you have any. I also want to acknowledge the fact that this plan is a result of quite a bit of work and work by many people, and we have council person Sally Green in the audience who participated on this, both on the steering committee, and she had the opportunity to serve on the work group also along with your staff member James Harris, who and Alderman Gist served on the steering committee, who and it was the work group, however, which was composed mostly of staff and Sally, who provided the guidance of through this process, which took several months, and the process was supported by a consultant that was hired to assist us in this process. And but I will say, however, before I get to a brief introduction of the task force, that I envy you as older people, because you commented on the number of items in your budget that you have no control over, and I can appreciate that, because when the commissioners think of the number of items in our budget that we have no control over, it just causes our minds to boggle, because when you consider the Medicaid and the Medicaid issue, the fact that the last year the governor proposed a 5% increase for all state employees, which, you know, normally we applaud state employees getting increases, but we had programmed 3% into the budgets of all of the school systems, and after the fact, we had to come back, and then we had the fortunate opportunity to have to pay $24 million for an elementary school that we paid $10 million to construct 5 years earlier, and I know you all are aware of the forces that impact those things, which we have no control over, and you know, we have 800 employees in county government, and we experience the same kind of health insurance increases that you. And now that's just some of the forces that. So I envy you. You. And I know for you, like us, having to make the decision about whether or not to raise taxes to support the things your residents think are important is probably one of the most agonizing decisions you have to make every year. It is for us. So I envy you, and I appreciate the time that you devoted to that. And I don't have the opportunity to sit through other folks agonizing over those things very often, but I did tonight, and I'm sure you'll be doing that further. But The 10-year plan is a plan that we hope that you will support. We've delivered copies of it to you tonight, and we hope you will review it, embrace it, and as I said, it's the result of the hard work of a lot of people. The plan itself, however, is not going to solve the problem of chronic homelessness. And the fact that the plan is focused on chronic homelessness does not by any means indicate that the others in our community who are homeless are not, and their plight is not important to us. We chose to focus on this part of the continuum because it is a continuum. In order to address the needs of the homeless, there needs to be a continuum of services and options available in the community. When I said in the community, this entire community owns this issue of homelessness because there are many forces that work that have to come together if we're going to address this problem over a 10-year plan, over a 10-year period. You know, and this is not a sprint. It's a marathon. We have to work at it over time. And we chose to focus on one particular model for the chronic homelessness. That is the Housing First model. And the Housing First model is a model that requires all of the support services to be brought to bear on the needs of the homelessness in that housing setting. But those same support services are necessary for the entire spectrum of homeless people in the county. Many of those homeless people, the chronic homeless especially, are the ones that create the largest impact economically on your budgets, on the county's budget, on the sheriff's, on the police department budget. And that's why we're trying to get some control over that part, because that will free up money for us to address the needs of the other people who are homeless and other needs of human services in the county and in your town. I think I'll stop there and ask Dr. Fikes, if I haven't stole her thunder, if she wants to make any comments, and then we'll entertain any questions. And by the way, when we get to entertaining questions, I invite Alderman Gist and Councilman Sally Green and James Harris to chime in, because when I said this was a collaborative effort, I don't have all the answers, she doesn't have all the answers. None of us have all the answers, because this is a community-wide effort, to put the plan together, and it must be a community-wide effort of all of the governments and all of the human services and all of the justice services providers to come together to make this plan work. So, Dr. Fikes.
Thank you. Good evening. What you have before you tonight is the culmination of about 16 months of work undertaken by the Partnership to End Homelessness to create this 10-year plan to end homelessness. We've had collaboration, of course, with the county and the towns, as well as the Triangle United Way. We've also had the opportunity to engage quite a few of our community members through forums, through community focus groups, and we also had an opportunity to engage some graduate students from the UNC School of Public Health. As Commissioner Carey has stated, the main focus of this plan is to end chronic homelessness without excluding the needs of all homeless individuals and families. I will tell you that on page 4 of the report that you have before you tonight are definitions of different types of homelessness. And I will just mention that when we talk about chronically homeless, we're talking about unaccompanied individuals with a disabling condition who have been continuously homeless for more than 1 year or who have had at least 4 episodes of homelessness in the past 3 years. So those would be those that we identify as the chronically homeless. As you will see in the plan, there are 5 goals to address homelessness in our community. The first one does target reducing chronic homelessness. The second one relates to increasing employment opportunities. The third relates to prevention of homelessness in our community. The fourth, increasing access to services. And then the fifth, increasing public participation in ending homelessness. There are several strategies that we've identified to address these goals, and those strategies are in the plan starting on page 37. Of course, there will be a lot of work that will need to be undertaken over the next 10 years in order to fully implement this plan. So there are a couple of next steps that we do want to mention to you tonight and allow Commissioner Carey to do that.
Okay. Thank you. As you've heard, the plan, putting the plan together required a lot of work, but the real work begins once the plan is adopted by all of the jurisdictions and once we begin the process of implementing the plan. And that's actually is the next step for the local governments and all of the partners to adopt and endorse the plan. And when I mentioned the fact that the labor-intensive part of the work really begins now with implementation, and in order to embark on that implementation piece, it requires some additional resources, staff resources. And as a part of the implementation process, we're asking each of the partners who came together and contributed funds to develop the plan to also contribute funds to hire one staff person to implement the plan, because we found that in the past when we have developed plans and asked one government or the other to implement them, implement the plans, the plans usually sat on the shelf and gather dust. And we don't need any more plans sitting on the shelf gathering dust, because this issue is important. It's important to everyone in the community, and we must own it as a collaborative group. And so we're asking each of the towns and the county, in the same proportion that they contributed to funding the development of the study, to fund a position to help implement the plan. This has to be someone's primary and only responsibility to organize all of the partners and all of the resources that's necessary to implement this plan. That includes trying to identify resources from outside the community to help finance portions of the plan that cannot be financed with resources from within the county. So that is the second step. And I know the recommendation in the plan is that the person actually be an employee of the county. But we're not locked into that. I think the county would consider, as long as the contribution is made for the person to be employed by any of the governments who's willing to take the to add a position to their staff and provide the administrative support for that position. So we're asking you all to consider that, and I didn't see that as a part of your manager's recommendation, but I'm sure he was aware of the need and the request prior to developing his recommendation, but I'm asking you to seriously consider that, because in a collaborative effort like this, it is important for all of the partners to continue to participate if we're going to avoid having another plan sit on the shelf and not getting implemented in the way it should be. So we thank you for the opportunity to present this plan to you tonight. I hope that you will embrace it and hope that you will make the contribution to the financial support of the position necessary to implement the plan. Thank you for allowing us to be here. Any questions?
I just want to publicly thank Moses and Tara for their leadership throughout this process. It's been a long process that involved getting a whole lot of people kind of maybe sort of at least near the same page, and thank you for doing that.
Thank you for your role in it also.
Yeah, I want to reiterate that. I've been aware tangentially of this process as it's been going on and the amount of work that's gone into creating this document, which on the face of it appears very impressive, and I do want to thank everyone involved. By the same token, this is the first time this evening that I'm seeing this whole document. We had just a few pages of it in our packet, so I don't believe I would be prepared to vote on a resolution tonight. I would like to have time to read and digest the material and make sure that any resolution that this board agrees to, you know, reflects our best thinking on it. I do have a question, which is, I was looking at the cost schedule, which, again, I haven't had time to take it in, but you alluded to, and I've been aware of the fact that part of the emphasis on the chronic homeless is that that's the portion of the homeless population that is considered to use the most resources in terms of the current system, if we would call it that, of providing for their needs. And I wonder if in creating this document, has there been any effort made to identify where specific cost savings would be made as this plan progresses and where the costs we're looking at to implement this plan would be specifically and directly offset by savings elsewhere?
I think we have looked at what other communities have done that have implemented similar plans and where they have experienced some reductions in cost. We haven't specifically identified where most of the savings in this county and these towns would occur, but I'll ask Dr. Fikes to respond to that, since she and the staff has worked most closely in that, looked at many models from other communities, and probably more intricately aware of where most of the costs are experienced in this county.
I think Commissioner Kerr is correct. We have looked at other communities and what the cost savings have been in other communities. We have not translated that to our local community, so I'm not prepared tonight to specifically say what areas there may be cost savings. But we are aware generally and across the country where cost savings have occurred in other places.
Okay. Do you have results of that research available that you could share with us, mm-hmm. Email to us?
There was an excellent and detailed study done on Asheville, North Carolina, mm-hmm. Some of which is profiled in this document somewhere, I believe. My recollection off the top of my head, though, is that a lot of the savings or potential savings that were identified in the Asheville case study were in reduced emergency room visits and in less time spent interacting with the criminal justice system. And unfortunately, basically what that means is that a lot of the savings that accrue are savings that accrue to the state and federal government because of how those particular services are funded. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do this, but I guess another question we should ask our state and federal representatives is, how can we move toward a system in which our local governments would be rewarded for making such wise investments as are contemplated in this plan?
It also strikes me that it could be possible that, presumably some of these savings would be experienced directly at UNC hospitals through their emergency system, and there would be ways that they could participate. I don't know if this is part of the plan or not. That would not be directly financial, but through their counseling services they have, their social services that are connected to hospital operations, that could maybe help meet some of the needs that have been identified in this report. I don't know if that has been considered.
That is precisely why we need a coordinator to work with all of the parties involved so that we can share in trying to fix this problem. And that same discussion and the question you raised, it come up in at least one of the steering committee meetings, possibly more than one, because the people in the room were trying to grasp where the savings would occur and how they would benefit the parties in the room in trying to redirect resources to address this problem. So, and that's going to require a lot of work and thinking outside the box by all of the parties, including UNC hospitals, which will experience quite a bit of savings. And hopefully by the time we get further down the road, the state mental health system will be further along to mending itself, because it's broken right now. And,
that does indeed sound hopeful. we do have one citizen who signed up to speak on the subject.
Let me mention one other thing that is one of them that I neglected in the next steps, and that is for one of the next steps is to form it's called an executive committee to guide the plan through the next phase, and we're asking the partners to appoint persons, people to serve on that executive team, and we're asking the Cobb Borough Board of Aldermen to appoint one person to serve on that executive team. So that's another part of the next steps we are asking you to consider.
Okay. Thanks very much. Ellen Perry, if you would approach the microphone.
Hello, guys. Thank you for being here tonight. I would like to know if there's anything for the homeless. Is there a post office box that people can get their mail at? Because that would make them feel, you know, a little bit better about themselves. And is there any way that people can have free storage someplace? Because those two things would help people, you know, feel like they, you know, feel like someplace. You know, feel like that they were, had some place to stay.
I don't think there is any thing like that that exists now. I know that many of the people who are homeless, at least temporarily, perhaps not the chronic homeless population that we're speaking of, that this plan is focused on, do use the IFC shelters, their home address, as their address. And I know that's not sufficient, but you know, I don't think there's either one of the options that you talked about.
Well, see, I think that those two things would help tremendously. If people had a post office box, and if people had some place to put their stuff, yeah. Free storage, you know, all these storage units that are not being used during the winter, they could give about 10 of them. They can give 10 people the freedom to have storage.
If I may, I would like for Ellen to get a copy of this report because it's something she's very concerned with. Ellen, a whole series of focus groups were held, and those focus groups included people who are experiencing homelessness.
Okay.
And the issues that you're bringing up are very, very, very important issues because having a place to put your stuff means you exist, and having a place to get your stuff to also means you exist. So those are wonderful points to bring up. They came up in the focus group, and hopefully as this program moves forward, the ideas that came up in developing the plan will not only be used for people who are chronically homeless, but will also be used in service provision to the homeless population in general. So thank you for being so aware of that issue.
And I would just add that both of those items are part of the strategies that have been spelled out in
okay.
the plan. So
I just wanted to make sure because those two things are very, right. very important for people that are beginning the homeless thing or that are chronically homeless. Okay.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to both of you and Sally, James, Jackie, and anybody else who might happen to be listening who participated in this process. We really appreciate you bringing this forward to us. I think that it might make sense for us to sometime later this year schedule some time, maybe on a work session agenda or something like that, for us to have a little more in-depth discussion about this 10-year plan and also about the future of IFC services sometime later this year. Where is the report available is the question. Is it on the county website?
It's on the county's website. It's also on the town of Chapel Hill's website.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And it will be placed on the Carver.
Okay,
website.
We'll get it there. Thank you,
you
James.
Also, it's on Orange County Mental Health
OPC mental health,
okay.
Or OPC area program, whatever it's called now. Website also has some has a copy of the plan. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all right.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay. With that, let us turn to agenda item D2 and the design process for fire station number 2 and request to authorize town manager to proceed with design charrette, Mr. Manager.
Okay. Purpose of this item is to authorize the architectural firm to proceed to the construction drawing phase, which is phase 2 on fire station number 2, and to proceed with a design charrette for public input. We have Jim Stewart with Stewart Newell, Cooper Newell here tonight, and Chief Crabtree. While they're coming up, let me just make a couple of quick comments, if I may, because I know to some this appears like it's been a long process, and it has been, but I just remind the board that we spent all of last year working with UNC and then with the State Property Office to work out the details of the lease of the property, which allowed the town of Carrboro to obtain the property for this project at the cost of $1 a year for a 99-year lease. And so we saved a fair amount of money by that rather extended conversation with the university, but particularly with the State Property Office. But in the end, we got a piece of property that, in essence, will be free to the town for at least the next 99 years. With the opportunity to renew the lease, I feel comfortable in saying somebody else will be handling that negotiation other than myself. But we have been moving forward. The preliminary cost estimates and the sketch plans that our architects have been working on, we really couldn't move forward until we knew for sure that we had the property nailed down. And so while it may seem like nothing's been going on in the public arena, we've been working diligently trying to move this project forward, and I believe with what Travis and Jim will report tonight, I think you'll see we are making progress, and we hope to really start making progress with moving forward with the proposed public design charrettes and then starting with construction drawings and moving on through our own review process and the review process with the university. And just as a disclaimer, Jim and I were comparing notes before the meeting. I don't think, though we share the same last name, I don't think we're related, at least not closely. So,
I just want to follow briefly on Steve's point, with particularly since we have reporters here who might help inform our citizens about that. But in the context of looking at the challenges we face with the budget, I think it's important to highlight this very clear case of the town manager and staff's diligence in coming up with a really, really good deal on a property for the fire station, and the hard work that went into working with the university and then with the State Property Office over the course of last year that we were apprised of during that time is the kind of thing that citizens were not aware of, but that took took place, and now we're on course to start looking at the charrette. So.
For a couple hundred thousand less.
Right. Thank you.
I would make a comment right quick. His Scottish heritage is shown through in the budget tonight. And I share that with him as well, even though we may not be related.
I claim that proudly, Jim.
With the efforts of proceeding on with the construction and drawing phases of looking forward to phase two, we have now completed the estimate portion of the fire station. This was somewhat challenging with respect to the size lot, the size building we felt we need, and we had to trim it up to make things fit on the lot to have it work for us. Restraints from DOT as respect to the lot, the driveway, and the entrance to Winmore subdivision. Along with that, we were able to nail down some actual cost, current cost, if it was built today, for essentially a turnkey type project. The architectural study was completed up, and we come to you today as prepared to try to set a date for the design charrette looking ahead to get public input. Looking ahead, and it's in attached is item B-Boy, that the dates of this, we hope to set up the charrette within a month. Looking ahead possibly have a second date if needed shortly thereafter, given Stuart Cooper and Newell a chance to be able to perform any homework they might have to do to be able to come back and answer specific questions from the public. Moving ahead, we expect that to take roughly 5 to 6 months to create the blueprints or the drawings for the station to allow it to fit on said lot. We have plan review process through the Town of Carver, also UNC and State Property Office, along with the Office of State Fire Marshal, being it is a public building and not allowed to look at our own. Moving ahead, construction bids to be put out for 1 month, and then approximately 10 to 12 months to build the structure once that's said and done. Going along with what Mr. Stewart has stated, delays during the lease agreement, we want to confirm again that we have hired 5 of the 15 firefighters for this station. They will be merged within the department as it stands now through promotional processes, looking ahead throughout as we bring on more staff, and we have proposed that 6 firefighters looking ahead. The station itself, we're anticipating to go with a LEED certification, and that has additional costs added on to it that must be taken into account. And that'll be one of the items that we look for guidance from you on how much LEED do we want to achieve or attempt to achieve. Going along with it, we have the installment financing process that we will look for in the spring of 2008. And next month, we'll be bringing you a budget amendment to reimburse the general fund back for the installment financing of the fees that we have performed with services through Stuart Cooper Newell up to this point. So with that in mind, I'll turn it over to Jim. And I hope y'all have any questions.
Certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm standing in for Ken Newell. Ken is in charge of the project from our firm. I'm the old guy in the office, been there forever, and they say a lot of snide things about me and, you know, my two younger partners. So just to kind of bring you up to speed about the process, we went through programming phases with the staff of the fire department and the town staff, and we collected data from them, did a draft program of the spaces required, and went through 4 different revisions of that as a result of the comments. The building is divided into 3 basic categories: the apparatus area, the public area, and the private areas, as well as the siding. And as Travis has said, the site is somewhat difficult. The initial program came up with a square footage of about 11,350 square feet. Through the process, we managed to pare that down to 8,946 square feet, and the result of that is what we have now in the final program. What we really need to know tonight is what level of design you would like to go for. We have 3 different levels that we put into the program. One is a standard type construction, and all of these are, I preface that with saying that they are metal building frames, but they are conventional structures otherwise, because that fits the type of building that you're going to have. Then we have another that takes in the triangle area design standards, and then the LEED standards. So we have 3 different levels that we can do. And I think from our discussions, we're talking about doing a LEED certified building. So that involves a little different process, and it involves some additional cost. We won't know exactly what that is until we get into the process.
But we have budgeted with anticipation of those costs already. It's already pre-programmed into it as a beginning stage.
And let me just add one of the things that we looked at in proposing to select Jim and his firm was the fact that they had folks on staff with LEED certification experience. And, you know, we felt, based on the comments from the board in the past, this is the first building, I think, that the town has built since the last fire station, and it's probably the last one, at least for a few years, based on what I think our revenues look like. And I think we all want to make sure it's done well and that we're doing it in a very environmentally sensitive way,
And so at least at the staff level from the beginning, we've talked about at least some level of LEED certification.
Joel and Dan.
Well, I just want to applaud staff for that, because one of the things that we need to look at is this is going to be a building for long-term purposes, and part of the cost that the board needs to look at is that how much is it going to cost us to operate it on a long-term basis and not try to save money in the short term, but in the long term cost the citizens more money because we didn't take the opportunity to construct a building that is both puts less pressure on carbon emissions, less pressure on the amount of energy consumption, and less pressure on our water consumption. And I just, you know, hope that the board, when they see that first sort of estimate, they don't blanch and think, no, we've got to spend less money. Because I think the community is very much behind having as green buildings as possible and to include us, because we know this building is not as green as possible. But they built it the best way they could, and I think we should just really look at the long-term effect and not just think about the cost of building, but also the cost of operating.
Well, Joel and I are on exactly the same wavelength, and I want to ask it very specifically, Steve. Are we able to take life cycle energy costs into consideration in the budgeting for this, so that as we look at the stream of payments for the debt financing, and if we include more expensive energy features, that the savings from those, we're able to back that out and look at the net cost over time with the energy improvements.
Yes. And I'm assuming, Jim, that's what we would do.
Yeah, I would add to that. I started the firm in 1970, and one of the goals that I have always had is to make sure, and we do mostly governmental, municipal, county projects, is to make sure that the buildings are as maintenance-free and as durable as possible. Because one of the things you struggle with every year, I know school systems do, county and city government, is trying to maintain facilities. And so one of the goals that we've always had before green buildings came along or any of that is to create a building that was energy efficient and easily maintained over the life of the building. And that's one of the things we've always done.
Yeah, it seems like efficiency is kind of fundamental, and that I hope that would be as a matter of course, but there are opportunities, whether it might be a geothermal heat pump, passive or active solar features, that would add to the cost as compared to conventional systems, but the lifetime we're looking at for this building, we should see a very long positive payback from those kinds of investments. And I want to make sure we're able to fully consider those kinds of features.
We will certainly investigate all of those.
Okay, thank you.
I feel pretty confident this whole board would agree with what both of y'all have just said. But let me also just point out that the one way in which I would temper that, at least in my own thinking, is that I think that the capital investments that we might make with this building, we want to use the money we're investing as wisely as we can, and the potential environmental benefits are one of the rewards that we would reap as a community. Let me suggest that we have other sites and we have other facilities, and so if we're going to spend pick a figure, but $100,000 more to achieve a certain level of energy efficiency or of alternative energy source or that type of thing with the fire station, I want to do that only if that $100,000 is not better spent on making some other environmental improvement in some other aspect of the town's operations. If I don't know if I'm being clear enough in what I'm getting at, but the point is that let's make those investments in our fire station, but let's make them so long as there's not a better way to make those investments in some other aspect of what the town does, because ultimately,
I got you. Well,
the trash trucks we drive, the fire stations we operate, our police cars, everything that we do, this board is at some level responsible for. So I want to just throw out there the thought of looking at that in a more holistic way.
Well, certainly I don't have a problem with looking at it, but this is a capital improvement, and we are hoping that it will last until my grandchildren, should they choose to be on the Board of Aldermen, can say that their grandmother with the board made the right decision. Because we look at it in terms of holistically what it would cost us to make this energy efficient, and we don't have that kind of money yet unless we start playing the lottery. So, you know, as a whole, I'm not opposed to that, but I don't want us to not make a long-term decision because we think short-term we may put $100,000 where it may not last only 10 years, and we could get better benefits if it lasts 20 or 25.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like charrette issues.
Yeah, I think Jackie had a good point. All these points are, I think, are very well taken. I would just suggest that we go ahead and I'll move the resolution so that we can
proceed.
I'll
second it.
Hang on, let me finish, for Christ's sake.
I'm going to let you finish.
These are issues that can be discussed in the design charrette, and we have...
I would just as part of that, however, I would request that the board be kept apprised of the design process as it moves forward. We all learn from unfortunate experience in the Century Center process how things can kind of get ahead of us, or if we get focused on something that we think is really sexy and cool but doesn't really make sense for the actual facility on the ground, that we need to pay more attention to the professional expertise and look at the numbers as we go through the process and not let it get away from us. So I obviously don't want the board to micromanage this. In fact, I think that's part of what didn't work very well about the last one, so I'm not really sure how to balance all that stuff out. But
discipline.
Yeah, discipline and a willingness to let go of something you think is cool and sexy, because frankly, that turned into a Charlie Foxtrot, which is a military term, which is a euphemism for a military term, which is descriptive but not appropriate for family program.
One of the seven words.
Yes, that's right. No. Yeah.
It is cable, but still.
Right, but it's not 10 o'clock yet. So anyway, I'd move that we the resolution and that we proceed taking all these into account.
Jackie.
My concerns much more mundane. I want to make sure that we have the charrette before public school lets out, that both sessions are held before public school gets out, or people are going to say, we weren't included.
Our plan is to try to do it this month, Jackie. We're looking towards, I believe, the end.
The 21st.
21st, and then.
We had two alternates, the 21st or the 22nd.
Memorial Day is the 28th.
We're having another meeting on the 22nd, so we're going to suggest the 21st. That's a Monday night.
Now that we've started, we want to.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You're done. Keep it moving.
Okay.
Let's
get it done.
Yep.
Okay. We definitely want to get it started before the summer because we realize it's difficult to get folks engaged.
Okay.
Make sure that it's well publicized.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The motion is amended to encompass all of those lovely comments.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Members of the board, the next item, our final item, is one that holds some implications for the parent organization of the organization that I work for. So I would like to ask to be recused from voting on agenda item 4.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that I be recused. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
D4.
Okay, this is the presentation of the home program funding plan for budget year 2007-2008 and approval of the consolidated plan. The purpose of this item is
present to the Board of Aldermen the proposed plan developed by the Home Program Review Committee for use of home program funds for fiscal year 2007-2008. And James Harris is at the podium. James.
Thank you. One thing before I go to that item, if you look at the list of people who participated in the 10-year plan to end homelessness, you'll see that the manager and the mayor were on the one of the committees, and I don't think that was mentioned earlier. I just wanted to point that out. The purpose of this item is to present to the Board of Aldermen the spending plan for the Home Consortium for Orange County. In 2000, the board decided to join the Orange County Home Consortium to help provide affordable housing throughout the county using several nonprofit agencies. This year, we received an allocation of $661,000. It requires a $148,000 match from the local governments. Our match amount is $20,829, which will come from the general fund, and that's how it happened in the past. We received applications from four agencies this year, and the process really requires a public participation process. The county, as our lead agency, did hold a public hearing on February the 6th to receive comments, and after that we received the applications from the applicants. At your places, I placed a revised resolution that looks like this. It has a cute little box on it. I think you can follow that easily. Yeah. Under the home assistance category, we have an application from the Orange Community Housing and Land Trust, $440,000. We have a $250,000 request from Habitat for Humanity. Under rental assistance, we have an application from OPC Mental Health for $23,823. In addition to that, they'll receive another, help me, Alderman Coleman, because I have...
On the rental assistance?
Yes.
Another $200,000 from
right.
the allocations that are listed below.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So it's not that they're being cut from 333 to 23.
Right.
No.
Good.
The 333 is actually an addition error. It should have been
right.
233.
Okay. That's why I gave you this sheet
okay.
to follow. So they got more money. For operational support, Orange Community Housing received an additional $30,000. That's $30,000, not 30. I dropped a zero. And the administration, we have $66,000. That goes to the county for managing the fund for us. We had to reappropriate some money this year. We reappropriated $470,000. The reason we do this is because we have a spending timeline for these dollars, and if people can't spend them in a timely fashion, we have to check with them to see where they are, and then we reappropriate the money. If they decide they want to continue with the project, they can come back the next year and ask for the dollars. That's the conversation we had with them, and it was documented with a letter, and our chair signed that letter on that. So that's basically it. So I'm asking if you would approve this spending plan, which will allow us to also amend the consolidated plan so that we can submit it on May 15th to HUD.
Are there any questions from the board?
I want to hear Dan's.
Well, I don't have a lot to say.
Okay.
I mean, we funded almost everything that came in this year. We had excellent proposals, and we have these four organizations that are well known to all of us that do good work. I'd hope that Tara Fikes would still be here when we discuss this, because I want to commend her as well as James, but Tara in particular does the lion's share of keeping in touch with these agencies and making sure they're dotting their I's and crossing their T's and spending their money wisely and accounting for it. And so unless anyone has a particular question, I mean, you know, I supported all of these recommendations, and it was a consensus decision by the Home Consortium okay. representing the four governing bodies.
Thank you for your work.
Are there any comments from the public? There being none, is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and properly seconded. The resolution that was handed to us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, it passes unanimously.
I have one more matter related to this, which came up at our last meeting, which is, as you all know, each of the governing bodies has a elected official who serves as a board member on the land trust, and as well we should. But it's been somewhat customary that that person also serve on the home consortium. But the fact is that what comes into play then is that when we're allocating funds, we have board members for the land trust making the decision and not for any other organizations. So I would like our board to suggest that, and I'm not really clear on how, what the governing document for the consortium is, but I would like our board to put into play the notion that people, that no one who is a board member of one of the applicant organizations should be a voting member of the home consortium.
Well, I'd have to look at the enabling documents, and before, you know, I would agree to that proposal. You know, one of the concerns is I think we all, and you know, in some way, it's almost as if we shouldn't even participate then in Orange Community Land Trust because we fund Orange Community Land Trust. So my initial thing is not to say that I either support it or disagree with it, but I would like, however, to see the document, you know, the enabling, the creating document for the home consortium and what might be a more compromised position. Sorry about spilling the water. Is that when voting on that particular part of the budget to that particular entity, that that person may recuse themselves. Because part of the problem with making that is you may have people who know absolutely nothing about the process or sort of some of the hurdles one goes through if you're a nonprofit agency to create affordable housing, either rental or owner-occupied, and you would want that there, I think, that expertise. So I'm not necessarily saying that I would agree with that position, but I think we need to really think about it because there may be a compromised position. And, again, there's always a check to that process because the meetings are open meetings. People know, you know, it's a matter of public record who is on what particular board. And I think, you know, they could recuse themselves from making the decision about the amount for that board. And so I'd like us to discuss it first and look at sort of everything before we make that proposal to the other members of
the Orange County Partnership for Young Children uses a similar model because we must have some of our own funded agencies represented on the board, so we have that same issue, and we use a model similar to what you described, Joel. But I do think it's a legitimate issue that you raise, and I'm sure everybody understands the problem.
Well,
one of your areas of expertise, isn't it?
Just a little.
I'm happy if that comes back to us with the necessary documents that we could talk about a little more. I could respond, you know, more now, but right. I think I'd rather hold off.
Well, okay, well, let's request that our staff try to obtain whatever whatever documents there might be that kind of spell out whatever kind of agreements we may have that spell out how the home consortium is constituted and is supposed to work, and we'll take that as a first step in direction. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Are there other matters from the board?
I actually have one.
Joel.
Encouraged from town staff is that, I read the article in the paper about the statistics on who's being stopped and who's being arrested. And I had a conversation with the chief, I don't know, I remember a year ago, and I understand, I believe that Carver keeps those statistics, and so I would appreciate it if we could see them. For Carver.
In other words, there was basically some national study that suggested that police on average might be using racial profiling.
Right,
that
exactly.
Of
I'm not suggesting that we are, but I'm suggesting that it would be nice for us to look at our statistics because I think she keeps them.
It'd be nice to know that we're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have two matters for vote by the board, if you all are willing. First is I would like to be appointed to our open seat on the Orange County Economic Development Commission.
So move.
We'll discuss that. Wait a minute.
Oh, okay. You want it. I know you need more meetings, Joel. Go ahead.
I didn't say I wanted it.
I nominate Joel. Yeah,
I've been on it before, so I don't want to go back. That's fine. I just think, you know, we have also people who volunteer who want to be on it, and I don't know if we have anybody. I mean, is this the seat for the appointed elected official, or is it a seat for, you know? That's just my question. It's not in opposition to you, so don't take it that way.
I don't. No, I think we could appoint anyone we want, but it has been an elected official in the past.
Okay.
If Dan wasn't on the board, I would still nominate him for this because of his kind of alternative economic development ideas and his level of expertise there, which I think could be very useful to the county as a whole.
I think having the carryover for our own Economic Development Commission is important at this time, especially at this time.
Well okay. I'm not going to pause it.
And certainly having someone there who can help keep us abreast of what the EDC is doing would be great. So it's been moved and seconded that we appoint Dan Coleman to the EDC board. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The matter passes unanimously.
Okay. Related topic is I don't think anyone in Carrboro should be going to the 5 o'clock meeting in Hillsborough and then coming back to our 7:30 ESC meeting. And I would like us to request our ESC to look for an alternate date from that second Thursday, which is the same, which is right after the EDC meets. Just because it's just too close together.
So, in other words, our economic committee meets back-to-back with the county's economic committee, and you're suggesting that we...
I think it would be harder to get the county to move and easier for us to just direct.
Good.
Or
right.
Request.
I think as long as that motion was characterized as that we request them to explore it, then I'd be ready to vote for it. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second, since it's just a request.
So it's been moved and seconded that we request that the ESC look into moving their meeting time or date more to the point. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We'll try to draft a letter from the mayor's office to the chair of the EDC or ESC about that.
You're on a roll, Dan. Anything else you want right now?
Any other letters you want me to draft?
One's good for me. One per night.
One a week, yeah. Okay. If there's nothing else from the board, we have a request to go into an executive session. So is there a motion to move into closed session to discuss a matter involving attorney-client privilege?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
Did somebody get
matter passed unanimously.